This episode of the 9to5 Mac Security Byte podcast is sponsored by Mozl. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Mozl is the only Apple unified platform for business. Mozl's integrated approach to management and security combines state-of-the-art Apple-specific security solutions for fully automated hardening and compliance, next-generation EDR, AI-powered Zero Trust, and exclusive privilege management with the most powerful and modern Apple MDM on the market. The result is a totally automated Apple unified platform currently trusted by over 45,000 organizations to make millions of Apple devices work ready with no effort and at an affordable cost. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, and protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a 30-day free trial and see firsthand why Mozl is more than an Apple MDM. Mozl is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mozl.com. That's business.mozl.com. Thanks to Mozl for sponsoring the 9to5 Mac Security Byte podcast. This is the 9to5 Mac Security Byte podcast. I'm your host, as always, Aaron Wychulis. We have a lot to cover in this episode, everything from Apple's bug bounty program back in hot water to renewed controversy around the App Store's collection of data for analytics regarding the search box. Plus, Loop hits the App Store, a first-of-its-kind privacy app that educates users on what exactly iOS is sharing about them to other apps and third-party advertisers. So joining me again to talk all about this is Talal. He's a veteran iOS developer and one half of the renowned security research duo under the name MISC. You might know them from their notable 2020 clipboard snooping research that disclosed how dozens of popular iOS apps were silently reading users' clipboards on launch, or from their 2022 research on how App Store analytics were uniquely identifying iCloud accounts, despite Apple saying otherwise. More on that soon. So without further ado, Talal, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks, Aaron. Thanks for having me again. There's a lot to talk about, and I'm happy to hop again on your podcast. We can get started with the App Store search data if you'd like.
Sure. Well, before we begin, for listeners that might have missed your previous appearance, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit more and explain what MISC is?
I thought you did a great introduction, so like I thought I can just skip over that. So yeah, I'm Talal. I'm one of two under Team MISC. We've been doing mostly privacy research focused on Apple platforms for, I would say, about the past 6 years or so. We've been really looking into various aspects of Apple platforms, whether it's the clipboard. We started off with the clipboard research back in 2020. We did a lot of we looked into the app analytics and how that works. Most recently, our focus has been a lot on fingerprinting, and this is why we are currently developing, and it's been out now for about a year. Silo, it's our privacy focused web browser that really targets fingerprinting. And as a result of that, we built Loop, which we will talk about later, that the aim of it was to educate and just sort of raise awareness of what is fingerprinting, how it works, and what apps can really know about you by just, you know, installing an app and running it.
So, I mean, that's a great setup, you know, talk about your guys' latest finding on the App Store. So last month during WWDC, Apple launched something called Personalized Collections on the App Store. Mm-hmm. It's a new discovery feature that surfaces app and game recommendations tailored towards like a user's interest or behavior. And alongside each recommendation, there's also like Apple or app notes, I think they call it, that explain why a specific app is being surfaced to them. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't long before you guys found out how exactly this feature was working.
the funny thing is, so Apple has been collecting analytics from the App Store and there are various apps as well, but mainly the App Store. And the reason why we're picking on mostly on the App Store is because you can't really download alternative app stores, and it's really your only option of getting apps on your phone. So like you're really stuck with the App Store at the moment if you're outside the EU, which, you know, most people I would say are. Mm-hmm. So basically what we talked about recently is has been going on for, I would say, since we first talked about it in 2022. And the actual analytics collection hasn't, I don't think it has changed. It's really the same. Basically, as is common with many, I would say most apps on the App Store, there's a lot of what's called in-app analytics data. So app developers really want to understand how their users use their apps. So which features are being used the most? Where do people look? What do people try to find? And it's a fairly common practice in the app industry. And Apple is no different from any app developer. The main difference is, first of all, Apple bills itself as, you know, privacy is a human right, and they do advocate for privacy. And they, I think, more or less, they do a better job than most, but still, we try to uphold them to that standard. Mm-hmm. And what we found is, first of all, their app analytics is quite extensive. And the thing we like to pick on is the fact that every single keystroke is logged. So every time you like type something, including any typos, even the time between each keystroke is logged.
Wow.
So we actually showed this on our X account. And actually, anyone can go to Apple and request their data, and they can find exactly what Apple has been recording about their behavior within the app, within the App Store app itself. And they can see all their search queries, how they type them, when they type them, and all of these very granular details. And which, again, as I said, this is fairly common in terms of what apps, you know, apps do. The thing about, like, mm-hmm. the main thing is you can't turn it off. So even when you turn off iPhone analytics, when you set up your iPhone for the first time, or if you go to settings and turn off what's labeled as iPhone analytics, that collection still happens. And in 2022, we found that all of that data is still associated to our iCloud account. And despite them saying that this wasn't the case, and this is why I think there are at least one or two lawsuits in the US regarding this specific issue. And I haven't really been following that side of things, but yeah, like, so this has been going on for a while. Not much has changed in terms of what they're collecting, but I guess now, because they have all that data, they can now introduce this more personalized App Store search feature. Mm-hmm. So it's really just about, yeah, like we resurfaced this since Apple has been talking about this new feature.
Okay. So to put it plainly, whenever a user is entering something into search, whatever they're entering is connected to their iCloud account?
Yes, it's not just what they're typing. It's basically every swipe, every scroll, everything they tap.
Wow.
That's in general called app analytics, and the App Store app collects an extensive amount of it, and you can't turn it off.
Yeah, that's interesting. So why should a user be concerned about this? Like, can you talk about any dangers or like red flags from having the App Store record every tap and how long it takes to even type a character, yeah, et cetera?
I mean, I guess that's just a blanket statement is, if you care about your privacy, you don't really want all of this data to be logged and collected and associated to you. And in the event that any data leaks happens, then like people can, you know, whoever leaks the data can see all of your search history, all your app purchases, all of that. It's just the general concern of very extensive, very invasive data collection that can't be turned off. And we really want Apple to do better there. That's why there are the lawsuits. And we have talked about this quite a lot, I think, the past couple of years. And now, yeah, most recently with this upcoming feature in iOS 27.
So I suppose it's like, this in itself isn't necessarily a huge danger, but it, in combination with something else,
yeah,
could be used for something greater.
I mean, yeah, like if you don't, you know, if you, there are certain apps, maybe you don't want people to find out that you're downloading, or if you're in a certain country, mm-hmm. if you download a particular app, maybe that's not really, I'm not going to go into specifics, but you can imagine what that could look like in different countries around the world with different laws, with different, you know, standards. Yeah
absolutely. Yeah. So you disclosed something, or, you know, MISC disclosed something similar happening with the App Store in 2022, which I kind of mentioned in the setup for the episode. Can you explain how this finding is different from that App Store analytics discovery that you made earlier?
Yeah, as I mentioned, it is the same thing. It's really the data that had been collected back then and now I don't think has changed. It's really now, because of how much they had been collecting, they can now introduce this new personalized search feature in the upcoming App Store update. Okay. It just has resurfaced because of the news. That's why we talked about it again.
What's the fix here? Like, should personalized collections be an opt-in feature rather than like forcing it upon the users? And if they were to make it opt-in, would it set like a precedent and force Apple to do this everywhere across all their services that do similar?
I first of all, I think they should basically because there is a toggle right now on your iPhone that says iPhone Analytics, and you can turn that off. And the expectation, at least we expected, I think anyone would expect, if you turn that off, there wouldn't be any kind of analytics that's being collected. So we want that. We want Apple to be able to give the user the choice whether they want to help Apple, you know, give them their data and let them know how they use the App Store so they potentially can improve the App Store and search results and so on. But as with everything, as with I think Apple does provide the iPhone analytics feature that should encompass the App Store and their various services from any app analytics data collection. So if that's not enough, Apple should explicitly give that ask for consent, just as they would with any of their other services.
So when you were talking about a toggle for a second, are you talking about the toggle that if you're running a beta version of iOS, it asks for analytics. Can we collect analytics on you? And is that the toggle you're referring to? Okay.
Yeah. So that's the toggle. So when the funny thing is, when you're running beta iOS software or Apple software, that it doesn't give you that toggle. You're forced to accept it because you're still running their beta. It's only when you're running their release versions when you see that toggle and you can switch it off. So yeah, if you're using their beta, you are basically opting in by default to their app, which sort of makes sense. You are in a beta, so you are sort of expected to provide feedback, and Apple's still in, it's not for most users to
No, you're 100% right, and I see a lot of people complain about battery life when they're running a beta on their phone, and they have no idea that millions of data points are being transmitted back to Apple every minute. Well, I think this is a great place to sort of shift gears and talk about Apple's bug bounty program.
Oh yeah, there's a lot.
So in late May, you guys announced on X that Misc would no longer submit vulnerabilities through Apple's bug bounty program. And your post sort of went viral within the security community. You know, it prompted a lot of other researchers to share their grievances, from dealing with Apple. And this controversy around Apple's bug bounty program isn't really new either. There was a 2021 Washington Post report that cited more than two dozen security researchers describing slow responses and poor communication with Apple and confusion just around the whole process. So I have to say, due to the nature of my work, I talk with a lot of iOS and macOS researchers and engineers, and no one is telling me otherwise. So Talal, Misc is a very notable name in the security research space. So I feel no longer going through the bug bounty program feels such a loss for Apple and then by proxy, all of its users. Can you share what exactly happened that caused y'all to just give up on the program?
So to start, we are quite a small player in when it comes to bug bounty programs. We're not primarily our work, me and Tommy, we're not really focused on finding bugs and security holes in whether it's Apple platforms or any other platform. It's really during our work, during our day-to-day research and just our own curiosity, we sometimes come across certain bugs that we think can be potentially used as part of a chain of a larger attack on Apple platforms. So we have participated in the past in the Apple bug bounty program. So the first one being the clipboard research that we did back in 2020, and the most recent one being the archive utility bug that we found in macOS. But as you mentioned, it's not just us that we have big grievances with Apple and the bug bounty program, it really just, it boils down to just Apple's lack of transparency. And I think because Apple's like known, you know, just focus on their own, you know, security. They're really tight-lipped. That's how they operate. It doesn't give them any favors when it comes to, you know, dealing with the security researchers who are like in many cases in good faith trying to inform Apple of the bugs and findings that they have. And like we in our position, we're not, that's not really our focus. That's not how we that's not what we mainly do. But we have, again, we are interested in first like reporting these bugs to Apple, especially if we think the bug is dangerous enough that it can harm users. We would rather let Apple know. And as a bonus, it would be nice if we can get a bounty out of it. But yeah, it hasn't been the best experience.
Yeah, so you guys aren't doing this for the money, but at the same time, like, this is not a charity. I feel like this is the sentiment for most people. It's like, I suspect that there are many iOS, macOS researchers that are submitting bugs expecting money.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, and it is disappointing because, you know, a lot of people, it's not a charity, and you expect this company that's worth $4 trillion to at least give you some kind of kickback for protecting billions of people.
Yeah.
I go back. So like, was there a specific instance that caused you guys to be like, okay, you know, like, we're not going to submit. We're not even going to deal with this anymore. This is too much.
Yeah. I think it's one of those situations where it's like death by a thousand cuts. It's not really that one incident, but it's just the lack of communication. I can basically narrow it down to lack of communication. And when they say the other thing where they say, oh, this is not an issue, but like later down the line, they fix it. This happened this happened the first time with the clipboard bug that we talked about. Again, to kind of summarize that one, in 2020, we reported to Apple that it's not really, let's say, it's not really a bug. It's really sort of a long-standing assumption of apps where any app can just like look at the clipboard and read its contents, which is sort of okay. Like, you know, when you're opening different apps, the app, you know, can look at the clipboard, but there can be a lot of things on the clipboard. You can have photos, you can have
passwords,
ID, passwords, whatever. Yeah, there's a lot that can be on the clipboard, and we just sort of demonstrated that. Oh, like if you have a password, then an app can just like read your password from the clipboard. If you have a photo, if you copied a photo, it can read the geolocation from the photo and like sort of infer where you're located. And like, there's a bunch of things that can be potentially dangerous when you're when you just like allow any app to read the clipboard. So we did that. We reported to Apple. It took them a month to get back to us, and they told us, this is how clipboards work. Not a big deal. And they said, you know, there are certain mitigations when it comes to passwords. If you copy a password, it then gets cleared from the clipboard within 20 minutes or so. Like there are some small mitigations there, but they sort of said, not a big deal, not a huge issue. We published this research and we get some attention around it, but it wasn't really something, again, we're not really bug bounty hunters. So that But then we find in iOS 14, so this was in early 2020, in June of 2020, Apple talked about iOS 14. And that's when we saw the clipboard notification for the first time, when iOS would just tell you that, you know,
that's right,
when you copy something and you paste something, it says, Instagram pasted from Safari, or the famous clipboard notification. And we sort of said, oh, wait, wasn't that us?
Wow.
And we reach out to Apple and they say, so this is sort of in response to your research, and you will be credited once iOS 14 comes out. And iOS 14 comes out, and we say, is there a bounty for this? Mm-hmm. They just tell us that, oh, you were not the first party to report this, so you're not going to be eligible for a bounty. So that was kind of our first experience with the bug bounty program. Then we had something relating to AirPlay. We did get a bounty for that one. Passwords, we reported, and again, a fairly minor issue where the passwords app would first default to plain text HTTP when fetching icons for the various websites that you have. So that one, yeah. And then like later, we report this, they say it's not really an issue. And then later we find that there is a toggle to kind of disable this. And finally, with the archive utility one, which we thought was fairly dangerous, we still stand by our research where we think this could have been used as a part of a greater attack to basically access any that allows any app to access any file on the
other. Wait, I'm not familiar with this one.
Oh yes, okay. So we sort of came across this accidentally back in October of last year, and the gist of it is. Archive utility on macOS has elevated permissions, so it can access any files that users wouldn't normally have access to, or like other programs don't have access to, mainly the app sandbox. So normally, apps can't read into each other's data folder, which is called a sandbox. Archive utility does. So archive utility has the ability to kind of just look into the access files. Long story short, there is a series of things that we can use the archive utility for to have any program be able to access any file on the file system on macOS. And all it takes is dragging and dropping one file. And then like your system is unlocked.
With no permission.
There are special permission prompts for, I think, desktop and downloads in certain areas. We show this on our blog where even if you click deny, it still gets access to the files. So we created proof of concept. We sent it to Apple back in, mm-hmm. I believe it was October of last year.
Okay.
And it took them until I think March of this year to fix it.
Wow. Did they get back to you? In March?
They did, yeah. So no, they got back to us earlier. They asked for clarification, but halfway through, like a few months in, they told us that this was a duplicate and that it wouldn't be eligible for a bounty. But this was like a few months in after we had reported it, and
yeah,
we have our suspicions around like this being a duplicate, but anyway, I'm not gonna really speculate there.
But you make a good point that kind of ties back into what we were saying about transparency. If Apple says it's a duplicate, you would never know because they don't provide any kind of proof or evidence that something was submitted before you.
Yes. So we reported the bug to Apple October 17, 2025. There was a bit of back and forth between us and them, but it wasn't fixed until March 24, 2026. And we weren't allowed to talk about it until May 11th of 2026 because they said they wanted to fix earlier versions of macOS as well. But what I found interesting is that, so we report this back in October and they tell us that this was a duplicate. So what we would consider a quite serious bug had been like in macOS for all these months and they hadn't told us if this was a duplicate.
Yeah. It's a sandbox.
Yeah.
Escape.
If anyone's interested, yeah, I think we can put this link in the show notes. We go into a lot of detail into like what we came across, various quirks about macOS and how it works and like why this attack works. And so I think we put a lot of effort into it. So I would appreciate people just like looking at this and like letting us know what they think.
So could this be a boiling point for the security bounty program? Like, I don't want to sound like a broken record. People have been complaining about it for years. Like I mentioned, since 2021 at least. Do you think we're getting any further to like a boiling point where Apple's security team needs could mull over doing some kind of reform and reforming the whole program and how it's handled and the communication with researchers? Yeah. So how do they bounce back from this?
Right. Okay. So let me first be fair to Apple and the industry overall. So first of all, I don't know about Apple's internal process. I don't know, you know, how many bug reports they receive, and now especially with AI and like how
very true.
There has been that issue where there's a lot of AI generated bug reports being submitted to various, whether it's Apple or even smaller projects. I think the most prominent one that even stopped taking in, I think it was Curl that wrote about this a while back. they were receiving way too many. Yeah, they were receiving way too many bug reports, and a lot of them were frivolous. They were just either frivolous or just plain wrong because AI just hallucinated something. So I would imagine Apple is sort of facing something similar. And I don't know the scale of the number of reports that they get. Fair. So I'm just going to give them some leeway here. But I think, again, they are a $4 trillion company. Their software runs on billions of devices all across the world. So they do have that responsibility of trying to improve their process, improve their communication, especially with security researchers, because it does improve their platform. It is something that, because I'm not talking about us, but there's a lot of security people who are interested in security, interested in whether it's for financial gain or that's their job. Mm-hmm. I think Apple should really improve their process and take into account, yeah, there are a lot of AI generated bug reports, but that is a challenge that they have to basically overcome and find a solution.
Right.
To this.
That is interesting. And I Googled, it is, you're right, Curl ended its monetary bug bounty program in January of this year. HackerOne, Nextcloud, yeah. And then even Google now has some restrictions on AI-generated submissions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is interesting and unfortunate. I kind of can connect the dots, like, how there could be a duplicate if people are just submitting, you know, a ton of AI reports about things. Like, I could see duplicates happening all the time. It's difficult.
I don't think there's an easy solution, but again, Apple, I think we can hold them up to a higher standard because of how big they are.
Well, let's conclude by talking about your new app, Loop.
Loop, yes.
Recently, you guys, I just have to say, you guys hit 1,000 5-star reviews on the App Store.
That's the crazy. Reception to Loop has been unbelievable.
It's only been out for a month.
It's only been out for a month now. let me just tell a little story about Loop and how it came to be. So this was back in April of this year. I was traveling and I was actually in Germany. I met up with Tommy and we were just talking about Mist and sort of our plans and what we want to work on and what we want to build. And this was like the last day for me, like in Germany, I was taking the train to France and we were just at a cafe, just talking sort of, okay, we sort of want to create an open source app that we can release for free as a way to educate about privacy, security, and sort of have it as an open source app that anyone can download and like look at. So
sure.
he sort of just mentions the broad idea of Loop, and I thought this sounds interesting. And then he drops me off at the train station. I go to Paris, and it was about, I would say, like 10:30 p.m. I was really tired by the time I got to the hotel. I just sort of half dead, open my laptop, just type a one paragraph prompt to Claude Opus, just describing the overall idea for Loop. I just leave for 5 minutes, come back, and about 80% of what you see in the final Loop app was built right there and then. That night.
That's crazy.
About 80% of the app. And I just like look at it, it's like, wow, this is incredible. But again, it's not releasable in that state. There's a lot of like things that don't really make sense. The app needs a lot of work. Yeah.
Refinement.
Exactly. Yeah. So that some refinement took us about 2 months of just, just back and forth. We released the beta, a month in after we started working on it. But yeah, like what I found incredible was like within just 5 minutes of like AI of our prompt, it got something. It just
Well, it's kind of like that's like in part the genius of the app is that it's so simple and so interesting and like eye-opening. You can explain it better than I can, but it takes like everything that iOS API all the iOS APIs and it like will educate users on what exactly is showing to other apps and services from your phone. So it can be like what phone you're using, your location. Oh, you have the Tesla app installed. You must be a Tesla driver. And it can make all these assumptions about you. I'll let you go ahead and explain.
Yeah. So, like I talked about how Loop came to be, but didn't really talk about the app itself. So taking a step back, why did we make Loop and what does it do? The broader context of this is what's referred to as fingerprinting. Mm-hmm. Fingerprinting is really a way for apps and websites to be able to track someone across when they're using these various apps without really having a shared account that ties this user across these different apps. So like if you open Instagram, you look at a post and then you open Reddit, for example, and you see ads for the thing that you saw on Instagram, even though mm-hmm. you know, they're different companies, you're not logged in with the same account. How were you tied across the different, and it's not just your IP. So even if you use a VPN, you're still being tracked that way.
Tal, I have to ask you, if I'm talking about something, like I'm talking about getting a new iPad and then I see iPad ads on Facebook,
oh,
is it listening to me? The people want to know.
That is the $1 million question. I don't think anyone has a really clear answer to it, but I would think that I don't think there, at least there hasn't been any credible evidence, at least that I'm aware of, that these devices are listening. However, there are a lot of subtle things that someone can do, especially let's say you're talking about buying an iPad and then to a friend of yours and they look for an iPad. Because you were on the same network and you're somehow associated, it might think, oh, let me try showing this person also iPad ads because their friend looked.
No way.
So that's what fingerprinting is about. It's trying to first of all, create a persistent identity of you across different apps, even if they don't necessarily know who you are. And how does it work? It works by collecting. So each app can collect very subtle hints about your phone and about your settings on the phone. So for example, your time zone, your phone settings, your font sizes, your various pieces of information. So each one of them might not be identifying. So like if your time zone is set to Eastern Standard Time, that by itself, there's millions of people living there.
Sure.
But who also, you know, like their keyboard settings, they have English, Japanese, and French. Okay, that narrows down people a little bit. And then like your font size is set to a certain size. So that also narrows it down. So a collection of these things together is likely unique to a small number of people. So that's how that's fingerprinting in general. What we wanted to do with Loop is we wanted to see how many of these small pieces of information do apps have access to. So that's how it started. So it starts off simple by just, you know, time zone and regions, keyboard languages, and now it gets down to more specific things like the keyboard, like the clipboard count. That was something that we didn't quite know about, but the AI, that when we built it the first time with the AI, it suggested the signal. So this is the count of number of times of how many times you cut and pasted something, and that's
so ridiculous. Sort of, like, why is that even being tracked?
funny enough, it's an old API design that goes back to the days of NextStep, if you know what that is.
Is that Next Computers? Like
exactly? Yes. Apple, yes.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Yes. Yes. That's how old that API is. So when Apple in the late 90s, they bought NextStep, which was the company that Steve Jobs founded after he was forced to leave Apple. And Apple in the late 90s, they're on the verge of bankruptcy. They needed a new operating system, so they bought Next. Mm-hmm. Next, then the Next operating system eventually transformed into macOS. And then from macOS, Apple created iOS. Mm-hmm. So the clipboard APIs trace their roots back to the NextStep.
Wow.
APIs. And the reason why that it's called the change count of the clipboard, why does that exist? It was just a simple way for apps to know that the clipboard has changed. So instead of reading what's on the clipboard and like trying to compare it from the last time the user used the app, the apps just needed a way of finding, oh, there has been a change to the clipboard, then I can do something. Mm-hmm. That's really what the change count was used for. And it wasn't supposed to be persistent. So like it should have been just it changes. Like every time you restart your Mac or iPhone, it should reset. But for some reason, up until I think iOS 20, the latest iOS 26, it's persistent. So it just it stays, the count remains for as long as you have your phone, like since you've set up your phone until now, basically. I think as of iOS 27 beta 3, they fixed it. So it resets every time you restart your phone.
Oh no!
So I think that's the change that
I think also 26,000
introduced. yeah. So once you update to iOS 27, it's gonna reset. Unfortunately, I'm sorry.
Oh, rats. So when a user, so the app is sort of like educational in nature, right? So like a user downloads it.
Yeah.
They immediately can go to the highlights and see a bunch of highlighted fingerprinting about their phone. Do you see this more of something that someone downloads and opens one time, or is it something that they like continue to go back to as they sort of evolve with their iPhone?
I think it's mostly just a couple of times. The first time you look at it, maybe you show it to someone else to sort of to tell them, okay, this is what this app can do. This is what any app can do, and like what knows about you. We haven't thought of a way, or at least right now, there isn't really a reason to open it many times. It just reveals to you, okay, this is what apps can find out about you. These are just all the public APIs that iOS offers. Since the app is open source, anybody can take a look and suggest changes to the app, and even like build their own features into the app. But as it stands right now, it's really just a way to, okay, this is what apps can find out about you.
Yeah, it's eye-opening. It's crazy. So like I'm in the process of learning Mandarin. So I have a Mandarin keyboard on my phone.
Okay.
And I also have like a bunch of Mandarin apps installed. Okay. Like there's a Chinese like encyclopedia installed on my phone. There's Duolingo. There's Pimsleur. There's this and that.
Yeah.
And the app doesn't make the connection itself, but I think it would be so cool if somehow you could make that connection for me and put it in highlights. Like, oh, we see that you have all this stuff installed in this keyboard, therefore you're probably learning Mandarin.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. There's a lot of connection we would like to make. There's like a simple one. First, we try to look at a set of different apps that the user has installed. And there is actually a limitation from iOS. iOS can only, it only lets an app check for 50 different apps. So if you look at the installed app section of Loop, there's only 50 apps that it can check. So that's our limitation. We can't really just look at all of the apps that are installed and make inferences. It's really, there are certain apps that we thought would be broad enough. So things like, you know, right. Duolingo, a bunch of privacy apps like Signal, Proton VPN, Tesla app, like certain things that we think would make sort of make sense in this context. Different apps can basically, maybe like a certain app is looking for like language learners. So it has a bunch of like language learning apps that it looks for. Another interesting connection that we found is, when you set up like new AirPods, the default name is like Talal's AirPods, okay, Aaron's AirPods. That name, like when you have them connected, like when you're wearing them, any app can actually see that name.
Oh,
so
interesting.
If you just leave that default name that you know basically all AirPods have,
yeah,
and open Loop. Loop will tell you like, oh, like your AirPods are named Aaron's AirPods, so your name is likely Aaron.
Wow. Oh my gosh! I didn't
yeah.
know that.
So if you just haven't connected, yeah. So like, there's a bunch of like little things that Loop tries to infer about you by just looking at these APIs.
Yeah.
And it just the point is to kind of showcase that if Loop can do it, then any app can do it as well.
So where can people find Loop? And you said it's open source, so I'm assuming it's free to download.
Yeah. So Loop is free. It's really an educational app. The source is available on GitHub, and Loop is available on the App Store. You can just search for Loop, and it should be one of the first few results. We would love for people to kind of download, look at it, tell their friends about. Okay, this is what apps do. I think the main feedback we've received is people see this and they think, okay, what can I do about this then? Like if if apps know all this information about me, how can I change? Can I delete this information? Can I change this information? Unfortunately, the answer is not really. However, there's a couple things people can do if they're really concerned about this. Is first of all, delete apps that you don't really use. So just kind of keep a core list of apps that you really use every day. And of those, there's likely a web-based version of that app. So if you use X, you use Instagram, you use many apps have web equivalents, and we think those are likely safer to use if you use a privacy-focused web browser. So this is a sort of plug for like our own browser, but like any, if you use a web-based version, you're more protected against this type of fingerprinting because native apps have access to so much compared to web-based versions of apps. You can still get fingerprinted on the web, but there are more protections there compared to what's available for native apps.
Talal, thank you so much for coming back on. This has been really great.
Thank you for having me.